Hello, everyone. Welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and it's Sunday, and we're here again for our weekly practice of being with one another and seeing where this conversation flows. This week, we've had some lovely stories of the way that this podcast, this broadcast, this video recording reaches you and touches your lives, and it's quite beautiful to be here again and knowing that we're being heard and listened to and joined in with. So thank you so much for being here, whether you're listening on the podcast later on or whether you're here on the 17th of July 2022, who knows when you're here, but we are grateful for your participation and the feeling of community that we're inside of as you join us. So this week we've got a source that Justin is a brilliant source that Justin has chosen us for this week. I love the source, Justin. I'm completely amazed that this has been written and that Oren J. Sofa is speaking such beautiful notions that are so important and reflective of our work, actually. I'm really appreciating that. When I say our work, I mean our work as Third Space and the kind of programs that we run and everything. So Justin, thank you for finding this. Thank you for choosing it. And here we are for another conversation.
Here we are. Exactly. Thank you, Lizzie. Well, I'm very pleased to have been introduced to this amazing source that, like you say, Lizzie, is so deeply reflective of commitments that we're in the middle of with the kind of coaching that we do and the kind of teaching that we do and all the things that we're up to in the world. And it's a gift that Oren J. Sofa has found a way to express so succinctly and so powerfully what this is. So I'm just going to read it and we'll see where we go when we've heard you read it. Holding the angle. Things change slowly over time through incremental shifts. Human beings are complex living systems where a small change can have far-reaching effects. I liken the process to turning a cargo ship at sea. A large vessel with that much momentum can't make sharp turns. However, a 1 or 2 degree course correction of the rudder, if held steady, will take that ship in a very different direction over time. This process of change often occurs in 2 stages. First, we gain an insight or new understanding into some aspect of ourselves or our world. This is the initial spark that sets the cycle of transformation going. Insight turns the angle of the ship's rudder. Insight can feel great. Clarity dawns and the weight has been lifted. Seeing things in a new light often comes with a rush of inspiration, a sense of freedom or spaciousness. Many practitioners make the mistake of stopping there. Insight is the beginning of transformation, not the end. It opens us to a new possibility, but as quickly as we change the angle of the rudder, the currents of our life come rushing in. The tyranny of habit exerts its force, pushing us back towards our old ways. This is the second stage, holding the angle. It's what turns a moment of insight into lasting change. We work in a patient and steady way, applying effort to integrate this insight. Every day we recollect the new perspective and practice this new way of being. Inevitably, we lose our grip and the rudder slips back into its old position. We course correct, readjust, and work to hold the angle. The second stage of change isn't glamorous or exciting, yet it's where real transformation takes place. It takes dedication, patience, and genuine interest to sustain. It's the meditator showing up at their mat each morning, come what may, the artisan diligently throwing another pot on the wheel. Over time, the steadiness of that effort takes root and a new way is forged. The transition often occurs so slowly that we only notice it in retrospect. One day we turn around and realize something is different.
I'm going to start from the middle somewhere so that it's a little shorter, Justin. So insight can feel great. Clarity dawns and a weight has been lifted. Seeing things in a new light often comes with a rush of inspiration, a sense of freedom or spaciousness. Many practitioners make the mistake of stopping there. Insight is the beginning of transformation, not the end. It opens us to a new possibility. But as quickly as we change the angle of the rudder, the currents of our life come rushing in. The tyranny of habit exerts its force, pushing us back toward our old ways. This is the second stage, holding the angle. It's what turns a moment of insight into lasting change. We work in a patient and steady way, applying effort to integrate this insight. Each day we recollect the new perspective and practice this new way of being. Inevitably, we lose our grip and the rudder slips back into its old position. We course correct, readjust, and work to hold the angle. The second stage of change isn't glamorous or exciting, yet it's where real transformation takes place. It takes dedication, patience, and genuine interest to sustain. It's the mediator showing up at their mat each morning. Meditator showing up at their mat each morning, come what may. It's the artisan diligently throwing another pot on the wheel. Over time, the steadiness of that effort takes root, and a new way is forged. The transition often occurs so slowly that we only notice it in retrospect. One day we turn around and realize something is different.
Thank you, Lizzie. I love the idea of the mediator showing up at their mat each morning. Oh, gosh. This is an amazing piece, actually, because Oren J. Soffer has so sort of eloquently and straightforwardly captured a couple of principles that seem so true to me, but which we forget. And when we forget them, life is more difficult than it needs to be. So the one is that we change. There's a really deep commitment in this whole piece, which is that to be a human is to be a changing, flowing kind of something, that we're not fixed like tables and chairs. And it seems to me there's been such a deep commitment of our work, Lizzie, and of this conversation, of everything we've been up to for years, is to say something else is possible, a better way is possible. The world could be different to the way it is. We could be different to the way we are when it's called for. And then the second part of this is it's really complex. We're living systems. Very, very few things change just sort of in a moment in us, in our way of relating to the world. So I really love that this piece honors that if we're going to change, it's going to take a certain kind of inspiration, like the sense that something could be different, maybe even the beginning of the imagining of how things could be, like a sort of a possibility we could reach for. I won't always be this way. Mm. But it's not going to happen just because I see it. Then it takes walking a path. And the walking a path takes whatever time it takes, and it's probably never finished. But the other thing, so I think both of those things are unusual, actually, in our wider culture, because it's really easy to get thrown into nothing could ever be different. I just am this way. It's also really easy to get into now I've seen it, why aren't I different? You know, the sort of the promise of radical transformation because I happen to read a book, or I happen to, you know, come across a source like this. I'm just going to be changed by it. But the imagination part of it. But then I think the thing which really touches me the most, which is such a brilliant metaphor, is the 1 or 2 degree course correction of the rudder, if held steady, will take the ship in a very different direction over time. What a relief it is to know that all I have to do is begin and take a step, and whatever step I can take from here in my way of practicing in life, like maybe I start making a cup of tea for somebody I love that I've sort of been feeling resentful towards, and I just take that little step, that little step, just like turning a very, very large boat, that once that angle, a 2 degree angle made, then opens up a new world, which comes from the boat being pointed 2 degrees off where it was before. And from there, another step is possible, which might actually just be more of the same thing, right? So I'm going to carry on lovingly making cups of tea for somebody that I love and noticing how that changes me and changes them and changes our relationship. So I think that's such, I think this is such a gift because it's really kind. It's also just really, really true. time and time again, I've seen it in myself and in people I love and people I care of, people we've worked with, is that this is how we take care of becoming the ones that we long to be in the world.
Yeah. Well, it's so beautiful, this metaphor of the boat and the rudder and the holding the angle. And yeah, so beautiful, all the things you're saying, Justin, and what arises in me when you're talking is firstly, the same thing hit me as well, of the kind of the tiny, tiny degree of directional difference has a projection that's much larger than the degree of change. Like just turning something slightly, if you look to the future of that turn, it's way different to the future of the not turn, as it were. And it's also helping me with my relationship to time. You know, I feel like somewhere along the way, I don't know where from, maybe it's cultural, maybe it's karmic, maybe it's goodness knows what in my family, I don't know what it is, but I feel like I have to continuously re-educate myself about the nature of time. And I think it's partly as a result of really, really profoundly realizing that we have today and maybe there isn't a tomorrow. You know, there's that feeling of we don't know, like nothing's a given. I think that's a really big thing in my life. But the downside of that is that often my relationship to time becomes quite small. And for me, this is kind of giving me permission to allow myself to have confidence that in all likelihood, there will be some time. There will be. And I both things are true. Like, I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. And in all likelihood, I will get to do something again and again and again and again. But in my structures, the again and again and againness is less prevalent than the, well, what if this is the last day or the last year that I have to live? Like, those two things are kind of in some kind of interplay. And my system is drawn more towards, well, this is the day I have, so how do we live today, kind of thing. But this is really inspiring me into kind of believing in the arc of time and the arc of practice and the arc of something much, much longer and bigger, and the small steps add up to something important. And also the metaphors, like, has a real place in me as well. So a few years ago, Justin, I think you remember, we did a sailing trip. Mm-hmm. And it was the Turning Towards Life where I was in a waterproof coat sitting on the back stairs of a stinking pub in somewhere in Devon or Cornwall or something. I can't remember where it was. And it was like, it was 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning, so nothing was open and it was raining and it was a sailing trip, so there was nowhere dry to go. Anyway, so I was sitting in that little stepwell with you. On that trip, we had signed up for a week sailing, and I've never really sailed before, and I haven't sailed since, actually. And not because it was bad, but because it's, you know, one of those things that if your life's not geared towards that, you don't just do it, you know. So it was a special thing. And so there was a mixture of crew, sighted and visually impaired. So we were the eyes, if you like, for the visually impaired people to be able to sail, and they would take on all of the things that they wanted to take on, that they could take on, in communication with us as their eyes, basically. And I remember one time we were doing this thing where we were sailing from one port around to another. And we had a literally like a rudder boat. We didn't have a steering wheel boat. We had a rudder boat, which for me, in my kind of slightly dyslexic brain, is the one where we pull one way, you go the other way, and you push the other way and you go the other way. It's very opposite of logic. So you don't turn left by turning left. You turn left by turning right, kind of thing. Anyway, so we were doing this thing where the people whose sight was impaired were on the rudder, and the people who had sight were looking at the land and looking at the compass and saying where to pull the rudder to in order to get us to the port where we wanted to go. And what kept happening is that there was like oversteering, because it was hard to communicate like 1 degree means this much movement of your hand kind of thing. So we were working out how to communicate that. And what happened is that the rudder kept going all the way left and all the way right, because we needed to work out what the small movements meant in actual terms, and whether it was getting us towards. Anyway, the captain of the ship, who's a very good, lovely friend of ours, had one of those monitors that records the way that the boat went in the day. So we didn't look at it at the time, but when we got back to shore and we were having dinner, we all looked at it and we described the picture of our route to the people who couldn't see it. And essentially what happened, because there was so much movement of the rudder, that we went in circles. So it was just this mess of circular lines on this thingy. And anyway, we had a really good laugh at the fact that we basically hadn't done very efficient navigating. But in this moment, I'm seeing that these insights that are tiny are so valuable, because they keep you at an angle. So something that's at an angle has a trajectory, whereas something that keeps flipping this way and that way dramatically. So maybe we have like one insight one day and one insight the other day, and there's no practice attached to either of those insights. There's no path, as you called it. It can be really discombobulating as well to have like 100 massive ideas happening all the time. Like insight has its beauty and its benefit, and all of these possibilities get opened. But if we're not living into them steadily, I think the word steady, yeah, the steady way, the patient and steady way, it can also not be growing. It can have the opposite effect in a way. It can be like, if we get, I know this part of me of like getting kind of addicted to insights. I want to know more. I want to see more. I want to experience more of myself or something. And this is, and that experience sailing really showed me, and in retrospect is showing me again, that just these tiny moves in the rudder actually produce something. Like there's something that happens that's meaningful as a result of that tiny thing if we hold steady. And that making these big dramatic realizations, of course they happen and they're wonderful, but that again and again and again and again and again, this is making me wonder maybe, you know, what does that add up to really anyway? Maybe just one little course correct in one's whole life could be the most significant thing. And I'm reminded, Justin, of our lovely friend Nina, who told me once that she gave a practice of making a cup of tea to one of her clients, and he took a cup of tea to his wife every day. And that was the only practice he had in this whole coaching program with her, I think. And that one little tiny little course correct, I mean, it wasn't even a course correct, it was a practice, it was a little degree of shift of doing something again and again, created this whole new world for him. So I'm really kind of humbled and really seeing clearly that insight is one thing, and there's like, that's the opening, if you like, and then all of this patience and steadiness has profound value to it.
Mm-hmm. So wonderful hearing you talk about your sailing. I didn't know that, the details of your sailing trip. Just starting where you just left off about, I was thinking of the same story when I was talking about cups of tea earlier, exactly, that Nina had told us. And so I'm thinking about coaching and the kind of coaching that we get up to, that we're really committed to, which is really helping somebody else walk a path steadiness and patience and joy and creativity and all of that, that has a chance of meeting what really matters to them in their life. So we have to be able to imagine with somebody a way the world could be, a way they could be, and then creatively invent practice together that can land in a life in the way that this cup of tea practice you were talking about lands. And that's that takes skill and care. It's really helpful to have somebody else with us when we do that, because one of the things that Oranje Soffer doesn't talk about, but you was so deeply implied in your sailing story, is that very often when we begin a new practice that could be really life-giving, could turn the course of our lives and ourselves one degree at a time. It's unfamiliar. It's probably not what we would have chosen, you know, just to do just because we're already in a life that's familiar and going around in a familiar, may not be comfortable, but familiar way. And so to have someone say, you know what, I think it seems to me, given everything you've said, that making a cup of tea for the person you love each day might be an incredibly powerful practice. How about we walk that path together? It really helps to be held in relationship and not always try to do it on our own. Just like you were held in relationship on the boat, that there was someone to say, I'm going to help you track the discrepancy between where you want to go and where you're actually going. And that's also the second part of it. I think that when we misunderstand, when we get into the story of magical transformation, which Oren J. Sofer's piece is sort of working against, you know, it's easy to go, an insight should change me. And then it's also easy to go, well, I'm taking up this new practice. I'm going to meditate or make pottery or sail. And now, because I'm going to meditate or pottery, do pottery or sail, my whole life is going to be different. Ta-da-na! And then it's not. And it's hard, and we don't get what we think is going to happen. We think, this has been my experience with meditation practice. Oh, my whole way of seeing the world and being the world is going to change. Actually, it turns out it's just really difficult. And so the observing and course correcting, like the being able to say, oh, look at what's happening from this practice, is the thing to do just to stay in, because what's really happening is the boat's beginning to turn. Or am I turning too much or too little? Being able to watch, and then being able to use our observations in support of the thing that we care about is important, and actually not that common for many of us to do. We don't sort of step outside ourselves enough to be the one who watches what's going on, as well as the one who's doing what's going on. And that can make the difference between a simple practice actually being something that gradually turns the boat, or being something that we just flail around in and have magical thoughts about, or that we just give up after 2 seconds because it's a bit awkward and a bit unusual and, you know, all that. So all of that sort of been stirred by what you said. But also the other thing that was really stirred by what you said is you took the realms of practice out of the simply personal and into the relational in what you said. You were practicing together with other people. How can we gradually shift how we talk with one another, how we listen to one another, what we look out for, how we help one another make adjustments, so that we can together gradually turn this boat one degree at a time? And I found that so helpful and so hope-making. Because I think it's really easy to think about practice in this sort of self-help kind of way, which is, oh, I'll do meditate. I mean, even if you take everything that Oren J. Sofer has said, you could still be on the line of, well, I'll do it on my own, and then I'm going to become a different kind of person and everything's going to be fine. But the world really, really needs us to practice together. The scale of the things that we face that call on our goodness and our compassion and our truthfulness and our wisdom and our care and all of that are all ones that we cannot do on our own. And your boat was a place that you got to practice in relationship with one another and change and be changed by one another as you learnt how to practice this practice of steering a boat where the people who are steering can't see where you are and the people who can see where you are aren't steering. And that just gives me enormous hope, because I think that if we start in the places that we are, in our friendships, in our relationships, in our families, in our schools, in our faith communities, we could commit together to the process of turning a large cargo ship at sea together with all the same principles that Oren J. Sofer talks about for personal practice. Yeah. And it multiplies that way.
Totally. And it's so sweet that you can feel all the metaphorical helpfulness in that sailing story, because I mean, it was such a teaching for me, the whole thing. And the one thing I also know is that story had loads of upset in it,
I ended up crying on the side of the boat because somebody said that I hadn't communicated clearly enough. Someone else felt like they had been spoken to in a way they didn't like being spoken to. Someone else felt very confused. Someone else felt really inadequate because they didn't say exactly what, you know, it was like there was loads of complexity in it. But what I also know is that our skipper, our captain, had the maturity to sit down with each person and process what had happened. And it deepened all of our connection and relationship so beautifully and profoundly. And we ended up, like, it ended up as like a kind of one of those really heartfelt experiences that had all of the stuff in it. It was difficult. It was joyful. It was ridiculous. It was funny. It was absurd. It was practical. It was impractical. Like, it had all of this stuff in it. And we were, you know, it was a very small boat, too small for the amount of people. Mm-hmm. You know, Matthew and I, my husband and I, were sleeping in the pointy bit, which I don't even know the terms of the boat. There's a name for that. I know all the people who sail will be saying it's called something, and I can't remember. But the pointy bit at the front. So, you know, we were having tussles every night because our feet kept touching each other and we had to get in through a porthole. And, you know, it was hard. And it kind of demanded relational intelligence. You know, we had to process it. We had to talk to one another. We had to feel into each other's worlds. And so I think this thing about being together in our practice is so true. It's so true. And I can see that those practices that have been with other people have been the ones that have been fruitful over the years. And all the ways that I've tried to do it on my own have mostly just petered out and not worked. Even though I had really good intentions at the beginning and my insight was big and I had something to follow, and really the practices together have been the ones that have borne a hell of a lot of fruit. And it feels really good to acknowledge that over time. And actually, one of the weird ironies of it too is that, like you were saying, you get into a practice and you think it's going to change, and then actually it's just really hard. The weird thing for me is that only when I look back on practice can I see what difference it's made over the arc of time we were talking about. Because in the moment, it just feels like, well, I don't even know what's happening here. I seem to be doing something, but nothing is, you know, the world isn't shifting. The ground isn't opening me up. The angels aren't descending. Like, I'm just here being me and feeling a bit tragic most of the time, you know, like, oh, well, I don't really know what I'm supposed to be doing or how this is supposed to feel or whether I'm supposed to be something that I'm not right now. And then in relationship, yes, it can still feel like that, but it feels more possible. You know, sitting together feels different than sitting alone in our practice. Having the kind of practices that we have as third space of talking and having unhurried conversations about things just to see what's here, letting everyone have their voice. It's just such... it feels like there's such kindness in it too. Like that we're made for each other. Like humans are made to be together. And our togetherness brings such excellent insight and practice and beauty and connection, and not feeling like I'm at sea, but that I'm in a boat at least with some people. Even if we are at sea together, it's different than being at sea on my own.
Gosh, just thinking about the role other people play in our practice and how one version of it is where, because practice is hard and unfamiliar and takes time, where we can have someone alongside us who's walked the path before. So I think with my winter swimming, no, it's summer now, the water's 23 degrees, and but in the winter when it's 2 degrees, I had somebody who told me, here's how this works. Here's how you do this. It's really doable. And it really is doable. Let me be the one who will talk you through so I could sort of feel held. It's not all on my own. And then there's the making a cup of tea practice. And it reminded me that sometimes we're not practicing with other people in the sense that everyone's making everyone else a cup of tea. I've taken up the practice of making you a cup of tea. But one way we can be in practice together is that we can talk about it. And I can say to you, Lizzie, I'm taking up the practice of making you a daily cup of tea because I want to practice being loving rather than resentful. So it's, I'm not just making you a cup of tea, I'm also cultivating something. Would you be in this with me? And then we're practicing together, even if your role in the practice is to receive the cup of tea and my role is to make the cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's practice where we enter into, we may never have done it before, but we enter into an unhurried conversation together and give something really the time it takes. Or we sit together quietly, or, you know, whatever kind of practice that we do with one another, where we're all in it together. And when it's wobbly and unfamiliar, we can talk with one another about the experience and make observations and make adjustments. So I'm so grateful as we come to the end of this conversation to be feeling, because we did this together, this conversation, as we always do, how, in a way, the thing that isn't addressed in this beautiful piece by Oren J. Soffer, it's the one thing that's absent that we can talk about here, which is what happens when all of this is in relationship.
Mm.
And the more we talk about what third space is, the more it seems to me that what is at the heart of it is a real commitment to relationship, that everything is relational.
Mm.
And it's really easy to forget that in a world that teaches us all the time that we're on our own. Thank you, Lizzie.
Thank you, Justin,
for joining me again, and for me joining you again, and everyone for being with us. I'll say, as I say very many times, if you find this conversation helpful, if you're listening to us and want to share it with other people, please do. We'd so encourage that. And all being well, we will be back at the same time next Sunday, and we'll see you then.
Bye, everyone.